2004, the country has been Californiaized, but maybe not quite yet. Judging from the tone and tenor of the Trump presidential impeachment hearings, much of the country still isn't quite California. Until next time, this is Kim Weir for Up the Road.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you're listening to Ecotopia. Well, tonight we'll be talking about an opportunity for people in our region to learn how their businesses can get involved in a program that will increase energy efficiency in their commercial buildings.
I hate the winter, can't stand the cold. I tend to cancel all the plans. But when the heat comes, something takes a hold. Can I kick it? Yeah, I can. My cheeks in high color, overripe peaches. No shirt, no shoes, only my features. My boy behind me, he's taking pictures. Lead the boys and girls onto the beaches. Come on, come on, I'll tell you my secrets. I'm kinda like a pretty hood Jesus.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico. Tonight we'll be talking about an opportunity for people in our region to learn how their businesses can get involved in a program that will increase energy efficiency in their commercial buildings. The Market Access Program, acronym MAP, M-A-P, is designed to promote and incentivize energy-efficient retrofits on commercial buildings. In the long run, this program will reduce energy on the grid, especially during the peak summer months.
PG&E and Prospectus Silicon Valley are partnering to provide specialized services for building projects. They will be inviting interested business owners and people from the community to join their info session on February 2nd, 2023 at 5:30 p.m. in order to learn more.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Lily's Brazilian Bistro, offering traditional Brazilian cuisine made from fresh, locally sourced organic ingredients. They're in the heart of downtown Chico. Lily's Brazilian Bistro serves traditional Brazilian dishes as diverse, exciting, and colorful as Brazil itself. Located at 142 Broadway, they're open Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. with dine-in and outdoor seating. More information, including to-go orders and reservations, are at 530-399-0675 and on Facebook and Instagram. And we're made possible by Chico Performances, presenting jazz at Lincoln Center, performing Songs We Love, a musical journey through the history of jazz music from the 1920s through the 50s. The world-renowned performers of jazz at Lincoln Center take the stage with three vocalists to celebrate the songs of the early jazz era, made famous by Frank Sinatra, Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, Judy Garland, and others. The concert is on January 24th in Laxon Auditorium. More information at chicoperformances.com. This is Ecotopia. We'll be back to talk to Doug Davenport from Prospectus Silicon Valley in just a moment. This is Ecotopia on KZFR. Our first guest tonight is Doug Davenport. He's the founder and executive director of Prospectus Silicon Valley. It's a nonprofit organization that supports innovative work in transportation, energy, and infrastructure. Welcome to Ecotopia, Doug Davenport.
Good evening.
Could you perhaps describe the role of Prospectus Silicon Valley for us in bringing innovation to businesses. What sort of innovation do you support?
Sure. So first, I would just like everyone to know the name of our organization is Prospect Silicon Valley.
Prospect.
You can check in that. Totally fine. It's Prospect Silicon Valley, and you can check us out on our website, prospectsv.org. Let me tell you a little bit about us. So I started this organization in 2014 around the fundamental idea that new technology and clean technology that was going to bring us closer to, a lower carbon future, a sustainable future, really was going to require the collaboration of just a whole lot of elements. We think of it as an ecosystem. It's just not as simple as you might think in kind of the widget industry where a new idea comes to the market and people scoop it up. Getting things to move forward in big sectors like transit and commercial buildings and roadways really takes the collaboration of big innovators, fast-moving startups, and, you know, really large and important public-facing organizations and institutions such as local governments and others. And so, you know, we bring them together, and we serve as a link, a super connector to drive new solutions forward. You know, when we think about this and the kinds of innovations that we support, we're really working in two different directions at the same time. We're working in kind of a market-facing stance, working in the areas of advising startups on their path to bringing solutions into the market. We're collaborating amongst all of those, you know, organizations I mentioned, plus more, to launch, you know, large-scale technology demonstration and testing projects. And we also work to help facilitate in the market, such as to bring forward new options for an owner for a particular technical problem they may be having to do with electric vehicles or buildings, or at times programs like we're going to be talking today with our partnership with PG&E. On the other side, we're also helping those institutions, local governments, and others implement programs. So, where an institution may be looking at converting its entire vehicle fleet to electric vehicles, that's very, very complicated, whether it's a transit organization or a community college. And we have some funding and the capacity to assist those organizations in getting that off the ground and connecting them with funding and the expertise to help them move that forward. We also at times will even help them administer the funding that they receive, so we add some capacity to what's usually already a pretty stressed organization. So that's what we do.
You mentioned funding. We'd be a little curious about how your funding works, but also it sounds like a huge organization. How many staff members do you have working with you?
We're very small.
Okay. Really?
We're very small. Mm. We're about 9 people.
Okay.
But the 9 people that I work with leverage the efforts of hundreds. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the magic in what Prospect Silicon Valley does and the team that we've created is that we link together major corporations, major agencies, small consultants, other experts, even national laboratories, bring them together to orchestrate the kind of effort that they would not normally do together under the free market. And so, the people that I have really represent a massive force multiplier to the bigger efforts that we actually steer.
So as I was reading your website and as I've listened to you talk in just the first couple minutes here, how do you find each other? I mean, it seems like you're talking about big projects with, heavy hitter groups of people either providing the funding or, who have the infrastructure. How do you bring all of that together? How do you match and how do you mix and match?
Great question. So, there is no magic here. We happen to live in one of the most, vibrant kind of innovation economies in the entire world.
True.
And so, I use the term superconnector because we do invest a lot of time in building relationships in the public sector where people see us as an important strategic partner to their long-term goals of decarbonizing their vehicle fleet or in removing carbon emissions from their energy supply or from their buildings. But at the same time, we're partnering with industry that's seeing this market as something that they will be, strongly engaged in and all sorts of other folks. So we tend to spend a lot of time finding those networks and bringing those networks together, building trust and building connection between them.
And there are some people, or not people, there are some agencies or groups that you work with pretty consistently or that you have several projects going with.
Yeah, absolutely, that's the case. So in the transit space, for example, our core office here in San Jose, we've done a lot of work with the Santa Clara Valley Transportation Authority, who's really over the years really strived to bring new solutions forward, and they've really worked effectively with us to number one capture the funding, but number two capture the talent to launch some really interesting things, and I'll talk about that in a bit here. But we've also partnered with other organizations, the U.S. Department of Energy, Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, and other groups that really represent, and we really align well in terms of mission, their role as a research and development organization and a public research organization really matches well with our goals to be a public facing kind of engagement and innovation hub. And so we can work from each other's strengths and accomplish more in that regard. At the same time, we've also developed something that we call peer forums, where we're bringing together people that all have the similar responsibility in electric vehicle fleets, in building decarbonization or building's energy efficiency. And we help them meet with each other. We help them learn from each other. We help bring opportunities to them that ultimately can represent opportunities for all of us if we can partner.
And so a lot of your projects are big projects that involve big activity, but you say you work with a lot of startups.
Absolutely.
I imagine that they don't have a big... They don't have a track record. They don't have big funds, or maybe I'm just imagining wrong. How do you work with startups that don't have, you know, the kind of bigness to them that the U.S. Department of Energy has?
Yeah, so I think that we're unique in one way, that we think really big, but we also are able to get granular. And let me kind of explain that
okay,
you know, when you look at the big picture, and you know, the reason for us, you know, talking today happens to be our partnership with PG&E and the Market mm-hmm. Access Program, mm-hmm. something that you'll hear from me and also from Mr. Salovich, Mark Salovich from PG&E about later.
Mm-hmm.
That sector, from a really big standpoint, is a huge influence on the energy picture for the state of California and really across the United States. Commercial buildings account for about 40% of all of the energy that we consume as a state.
Wow.
It's only matched by the entire transportation sector and all the vehicles that are on the road. So when you start to think about pulling carbon emissions out of those sectors, it's vastly complex, and that problem is huge. And you want to work with institutions that have the capacity to make major changes. And you want to work with institutions that are ready to teach others in how to do that. At the same time, most innovation, some corporate friends may disagree with it, but I think they'd have to confess I have an element of truth. Most really interesting innovations are not coming from the really big corporations. The big corporations are there to scale it, but the really interesting ideas that I've seen have come from one person, two persons, three people that are coming together with a new idea, and they fundamentally look at a problem and say, we can solve it. Wow. And we're going to solve it differently than the market does, but we know that it's going to make a huge change. And so, you know, what we have to do when we think about getting granular is saying, okay, here's this solution. How does this, you know, how can you approach the market as we understand it for, you know, how do you approach the buildings industry with this solution, and how do you start to get traction? It's up to you to compete, but we're here to help advise you. You have a solution in the traffic systems industry that can make, that can help reduce, you know, collisions, traffic collisions or other safety issues, or make traffic flow better. Well, there's already a highly competitive market amongst these giants working in that space. How can you, as a startup, start to gain the investment, the partnerships, and the credibility to bring a solution into that space and have it start to take hold? So we're thinking big in terms of our capacity to demonstrate really big ideas, but we're also thinking very granularly with new solutions that need to enter that picture.
So how do you find them, or how do they find you? How do you find those very innovative projects that are just a couple of good idea people?
Sure. We've done it differently in different times in our history. Early in the earlier days of clean technology, when electric vehicles were still a very, very tiny minority of vehicles out there, and often didn't have the kind of, you know, performances you see today with electric vehicles, you know, and we were looking at other kinds of technology and transportation and buildings. We were really working with a lot of corporates that had an interest in this space because they saw it as a growth market, and we had a large working space that we could accommodate startups in, and we had ways to bring them together. This was at a time when Silicon Valley was really flush with a lot of startups that were looking at this space, and at a time when there really wasn't the structure in the corporate side to you know, really offer this you know, on the consumer side or otherwise. So we would work with them in a, you know, in an innovation facility and offer, you know, opportunities to meet and partner with others and create some new solutions. You know, the market has changed in clean technology and in decarbonization. We're at a time when electric vehicles are really starting to become a straight market competitor, mm-hmm. and have some major advantages. You know, that market is going to continue to evolve, and so, you know, having early stage innovations in a market that's maturing isn't a good match. We start to think about innovations that have real relevance to what's being purchased and to the solutions that are needed, or the additional kind of, you know, incremental benefits that need to come out of that area, such as how do we do a better job at charging them? How do we do better job at charging, you know, 50, 100 vehicles? How do we take the energy that's housed in those cars and those trucks and make it a potential resource for the grid when the grid needs it, or we want to avoid, you know, having to satisfy demand in other more carbon intensive ways. Mm-hmm. So our approach has changed to be much more consultative. The physical space isn't as important. What's important is the connections that we have. Mm-hmm. Now, you ask me how they find us. There's a few ways that we do it. We've worked with corporates that wanted to meet startups in a particular area because they're thinking about how they're building their kind of technology offerings. And we will do open calls through a whole network of business incubators, universities, government programs and others globally to find startups that will come, and they will apply and kind of compete for the opportunity to be part of the program. We go through an evaluation and we select a cohort that then can kind of move forward. We've taken that same idea and applied it to a particular problem that a client has. Mm. You know, a need to manage, you know, vehicle charging in a much more scalable way, because, you know, buying chargers one at a time is going to just send, you know, energy costs through the roof. How can they manage things more efficiently? We've gone through and found, through a global open call, we've found, you know, dozens of startups that have really interesting ideas on how to do this, make those connections, and we're able to do that. At the same time, word gets around, and so, you know, we're constantly referred to startups by, you know, very credible investors, by others that really want them to have the opportunity to potentially work with us, and we'll work through whether or not there's something we can do to benefit them. So there's no one single program. I think that, you know, in a market like this, what's important is that you leverage the capabilities that you have in ways that are going to benefit, you know, those that you can. And at the same time, we maintain a lot of friendships that allow us to reach these folks. Mm-hmm.
Doug, I wonder if you could talk briefly about, excuse me, the profit motive versus the impulse to save the planet. I'm phrasing that baldly, but both of those must be in play with a lot of these startups.
Yes, and frankly, I'm okay with that. Personally, I consider myself a free market crunchy. Mm-hmm. I think of myself that, you know, an economy based on a far more, you know, clean, low carbon, and much more, friendly approach to producing energy or consuming energy is a great thing, and I'd love to see those win. We all know there's a lot of forces at play, and, you know, that could consume three or four or five of your programs just talking about the ways that the industry kind of, you know, doesn't make it easy. So, you know, what we've definitely seen, though, is, you know, when electric vehicles, for example, start to really take off, and the potential for those electric vehicles to be much more than a car, then, you know, it gets the juices stirring, and people think, wait a minute, this is something I can feel proud that I've done. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I think this is a time where I can make a very successful company from it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay. I think, you know, I'd like to see people that have really benefited from, you know, doing well for all of us. And I think that, you know, a company that's profitable is one that's healthy and it's going to be there for you down the road. Somebody once talked about the great traits of an activist versus the great traits of a global thinker. And the activist is really good at seeing the change and being able to do it once, but they're really bad at scaling it. The global mm-hmm. thinkers are really great at seeing the entire chessboard and seeing the entire system, but they're not always great at picking out what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think trying to marry those two things is really important. That's why we talk about the ecosystem. So we're trying to find those people that have really interesting ideas, that think that they can really make a big dent, but we'd like to see them become viable companies. And we've had several that we've advised that have become major brands, and we're very proud of that.
So we just have a couple minutes here before we need to move on to Mark. You can talk a little bit about the other, you've talked about some of the kinds of projects you're doing, the vehicle, and a little bit. What are some of the other projects, really quickly, that you've worked on?
Yeah, and I definitely want to talk a little bit about our partnership with PG&E. So I'll tell you that if listeners go to prospectsb.org and they click on the little link that says Our Work, you're going to see little stories about projects we've done. And, and something that we really focused on is expanding the potential for solutions to benefit more people. So we've worked with autonomous vehicle companies and transit agencies to see how autonomy could work with the disabled, with the elderly, how can make sure that it's a mass transit solution, not just a private mobility solution. We've worked with the grocery sector and Whole Foods to develop a template approach to decarbonizing their stores and made it available to the entire sector through industry associations and others. And we've done this many times. We've also looked at, really the country's first demonstration of smart charging, which is an automated form of charging that minimizes the cost of the electricity in the transit industry. And we made that available to transit agencies nationwide through APTA. So those are, and you'll see many other things we've done, small studies to really big things.
So listeners, I encourage you to go look at these projects. They're pretty interesting. But you want to talk a little about PG&E and that partnership.
Yeah, and I won't steal Mr. Salovich's thunder, so he'll tell you lots about why this is important to all of us. PG&E came to us because of our unique ecosystem approach and our understanding of the buildings industry and the understanding of how we can engage this industry. The goal here, as I'm sure Mark will articulate, is that, the energy consumed by commercial buildings can be very large. I told you it's 40% of all of the energy we consume. Well, there at times it is a tremendous load on the power grid. And reducing the demand and reducing the amount of energy being consumed means that you can produce less during those peak times. This entire program that PG&E has put together, which is amazing, and it's actually a statewide program, is meant to incentivize owners of buildings and operators of buildings to do more and do it faster with respect to energy efficiency upgrades to their existing buildings, and offering an incentive that really makes it very financially worthwhile. And, what we're doing is we're helping PG&E connect with the projects that can produce big returns. We're helping connect with the projects that really could use this money in order to make the upgrades viable today, and we're trying to do our best to help them achieve their goals. And we're very proud that we can help them, because we're really helping everybody in the process.
Looks good.
Thank you, Doug. Doug Davenport is the founder and executive director of Prospect Silicon Valley, Prospect SV. It's a nonprofit helping companies develop sustainability strategies. We appreciate your time, Doug, and urge listeners to go to that website, prospectsv.org, to learn more about the project. This is Ecotopia on KZFR. We'll take a short break and be back to talk with Mark Salovich. Electricity. This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico. Our next guest is Mark Salovich, who works with Pacific Gas and Electric. Mark is a senior program manager. He focuses on energy efficiency in the commercial sector. He manages three unique energy efficiency programs that focus on grocery stores, research and laboratory buildings, and today's program focus of the market access for general commercial buildings. Mark has been with PG&E for 12 years, working the entire time in customer energy efficiency. Welcome, Mark Salovich.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here this afternoon, this evening.
You have a meeting, informational meeting, coming up on February 2nd, this will be with Prospect SV. Please tell us about that meeting.
Yeah, I'll be glad to. And it's one of a few meetings that we're hosting in this first quarter of 2023 to promote the Market Access Energy Efficiency Program. This Market Access Program, which goes by the acronym of MAP, is being rolled out throughout the second half of 2022 throughout PG&E's entire service territory. So we're doing this coordination outreach for commercial customers on February 2nd in partnership with our marketing arm, Prospect SV. And the purpose is to bring awareness to the program and to target two specific audiences, what's known as project developers, those that work with our end customers on energy efficiency projects in commercial environments. So I'll stop there, and I'll continue to talk about that meeting as one of a few that we're hosting over the next couple of months to bring awareness for the urgency of what the Market Access Program is addressing in California.
So what is PG&E's area? Where I often find myself asking somebody, are you PG&E? Or, you know, So what do you encompass in terms of territory?
Yeah, you bet. We cover about 55% of the state's geographic space, from as far north as Redding, California, and north part of the Central Valley, all the way south through Bakersfield, from a number of the Sierra foothills towns on the east side, up and down the coast, from the Oregon border to Santa Barbara on the coastal side. So quite a large swath of that. And, of course, the biggest metro within that is the San Francisco, multi-county mm-hmm. metropolitan area. And we're one of four IOUs in California. And the acronym IOUs stand for investor-owned utilities mm-hmm. Versus private municipal entities mm-hmm. that provide electric service. Mm-hmm.
And the kinds of projects you're looking for, the website mentions developers, designers, builders, owners, and operators. You're talking about people who are responsible for how the building functions in terms of power.
Yes, that's exactly right. The market access program is focused on commercial buildings, although there's a lot of gray areas, and I can talk more specifically in a moment about that. But what we're focusing on, or who we're focusing on, are real estate management companies,
okay,
building owners, and business owners that may lease their own building but are responsible for how that building works as far as paying their own utility bills, as an example. And these specific audiences, these specific individual targets, are the ones who pay that utility bill and have an interest in reducing that cost as one component, but then secondarily also contributing to a more reliable grid functionality, which is what Market Access Program is specifically addressing.
So what kinds of projects would that... I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, no, all good. Thank you, Susan. But I do want to mention one thing about the Market Access Program. Market Access is part of a larger state of California focus to ensure grid reliability during the summer peak usage window, where the grid could and has had a challenge delivering all the electric usage needed
right.
in that specific time frame. And that time frame is from June through September, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. That's called the summer peak window usage period. That's when the grid and all Californians are using electric at the maximum level for all the various reasons, but particularly air conditioning units, as one call out. Now what's unique is that as EVs continue to flood into our usage patterns, those will be charged in that same window, say from 4 to 9 p.m. as a person arrives home from wherever they're at and parks it in the garage to charge. So the Market Access Program is addressing load reduction, usage reduction, specific to that time frame, because we cannot afford and cannot have any grid outages, even brownouts, where they're temporary, 10, 15 minutes. A brownout is an outage up to an hour, and overall a grid outage is an hour or longer. So MAP looks to commercial buildings to say, can we reduce that load in that specific time? If you can, we will pay for an energy efficiency project to support that reduction.
So do they submit a proposal? I have so many questions. What kinds of things would people be looking to do to reduce that load? What kinds things are possible for reducing that load?
Yeah. When we look at electric load in any of these types of buildings, the highest usage, about 40 to 60%, is HVAC, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. And, of course, air conditioning is specific to that summer peak time frame focus. So that is where we have the strongest focus, is how do we reduce HVAC loads through either building controls, window film applications that would reduce heat intake to a building, maybe what's known as BRO measures, or behavioral retrocommissioning and operating measures that say, what if we invite everyone to go home at 4 versus maybe 5 to 6 and start earlier? Can our organization, can the inhabitants of this, occupiers of this building, shift their usage patterns? So, and then, of course, lighting is a big one. There might be some food service in a building that has a load that can be reduced in this window of time. So those are the primaries. And then there's, you know, some other functionalities. Often, like data centers have a real specific thing to all their server platforms and such like that. Then you could start to go down into nuances specific to market segments. For example, another energy efficiency program I run focuses on the grocery store segment. Can they reduce the refrigeration load usage in that 4 to 9 window during those summer months? The answer is yes, and you can do that through specific new controls technology that's emerging in the marketplace, but that's very expensive. So this combination that California CPC, the Public Utilities Commission, has put together in the MAP program is incentivizing to reduce the cost of those upgrades to reduce the load.
So that means they pay for it? Or they pay for part of it?
Yes, that's right. The end customer does pay for it. And what we're seeing, though, is just for a kind of an information understanding, is most energy efficiency projects typically have a 2 to 4 year ROI, or return on investment,
right,
which is
mm-hmm.
just a payback period.
Right.
In the MAP program, because of the urgency of this grid instability, we are incentivizing higher levels. We are seeing ROIs for MAP projects come in at 12 to 18 months.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And in spite, agree or disagree with the continuation of the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, which services PG&E territory, which provides every bit of 5 gigawatts worth of power in a day. Even with that, there's not enough build-out, physical build-out that can happen that quickly to support the usage curve. So that's why spending these dollars, while pretty lucrative to an end customer to pay down their project cost, is supporting California in general.
You know, there's something, and there's one thing I have always been really curious about. If there's any research about what the relationship should be, and I'm thinking of HVAC systems, of air conditioning primarily, between what the outside temperature should be and then what the inside temperature should be. Because I grew up in Phoenix, and, you know, I think there's a huge difference between what you need to, how low you need to reduce the temperature when it's 101 outside as opposed to when it's 85 outside. Does that make any sense? So what I'm saying is I have often gone into places that I think are way too cold.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're absolutely right. So, particularly when we talk about commercial buildings, right? There's many floors often involved. You know, from 1,000 square feet to 10,000 square feet, or much higher on some of the commercial complexes. So, you know, that is such an important aspect. And how do you tailor it so there's no discomfort to the building occupant? That's where these BMS, building management solutions, which is a fancy word for, you know, HVAC controls, can migrate temperatures at a pace that, versus just turning a dial where, 30 minutes later I'm either too cold or too hot, can manage that shift in temperature over a period of time, say 120 minutes, a couple of hours, so that the occupant has significantly less awareness that, oh, there's a change in temperature. They're just operating as normal and customary in a comfortable range.
So
BMS controls are a key component to ensuring that the reduction happens with nominal interference to occupancy activity.
Mm-hmm. So how do they decide, though, what that reduction should be or what the change in temperature should be? I mean, I'm going to get on my hobby horse for just 1 minute and then I'll get right back off again. I've been in workplaces where the help the people who are there all day have to wear sweaters.
In the summer.
Yeah. That is a very site we need to quickly get an upgrade in to and completed, because that's so unnecessary. I can't, boy, even hearing that gets my blood going.
I know, right?
Energy rising. Yeah, because that's inefficient.
Yes.
And that's electric usage that's not needed for anybody's purpose or comfort or for any reason. You know, who wants to be chilly, you know, on an August 15th day that has 100-degree temperature outside? So this is why it's so important to get out this kind of marketing effort to say, hey, all those, you know, there's 16 million commercial buildings just in PG&E's territory. Wow. And to get that awareness, you know, we might get, you know, 10,000 to 15,000 projects completed in a year. Think of how much we're not addressing. And that's full bore steam ahead sort of thing. So you're absolutely right. How can we get that awareness out to those building owners, those business owners, to say, hey, there's a way that you can reduce your costs and keep everyone happy and support the bigger picture for California resiliency and climate reduction in the end as well, even though it's a few steps between, you know, reducing your air conditioning load to climate reduction. They are directly connected.
Right.
And so so that's really important that this is what the marketing aspects and that we're trying to do here over this year in 23.
So as you
hope that helps.
And yes, as you're rolling this out, first of all, is this competitive? Can any building operator, owner, user, is this a competitive process, or is this a process that you can take on pretty much anyone who's willing to participate?
Yeah. So here's the short, wonderful answer. We will take any and all projects if they pencil out for load reduction.
Got it.
Yes, so if you can reduce a load, and we will entertain reviewing your project for eligibility to participate in MAP. It is open to all commercial customers that have, well, that pay into what's known as the PPP fund, which that's an acronym that stands for Public Purpose Program Fund. It's a small, it's like 0.001 of your utility bill that funds efficiency and other larger scale programs for grid reliability in California. All utilities have this PPP charge on the customer's bill. So all customers are eligible, and then it becomes a matter of, can the building owner or building manager put this into their budgeting aspects in either in 22 that we just finished up pretty successfully. We had 130 projects complete in 22.
Wow.
We're looking to have over 500 in 2023. And so all customers eligible, can we work with the building owner to help justify all of the costs, paybacks, incentives before any project starts? We'll know exactly what the estimated electric load reduction savings will be, and then we will know what the costs of the project will be, and we can easily determine the ROI or time frame that the project pays back before a customer sees actual reduction in their utility costs.
Mark, I wonder if you could give us a specific example of one of those projects. Sorry, not necessarily by name, but perhaps a grocery store that enrolled in the program, and what kind of results have they seen, and what was the what's the payback for them?
Yeah, let me use an example of a tangential grocery segment. This was a refrigerated storage warehouse that had four different coolers, if you will, but coolers that were in the 3,000 to 5,000 square foot size.
Wow.
That then they would be a distribution center for us to delivering to the grocery individual retail sites. And the large doors that the site we're using were manually operated. And so you'd open the door and then you might leave it open for a period of time while you're working, loading your pallet to then exit before closing it. And that's one example of how these doors would have reason to stay open for a number of different reasons. And what the project developer did, they're a specialty in automated large door closer motors and controls.
Interesting.
So, yeah, this project developer worked with the end customer to say, let's automate the doors with all of the safety components needed to ensure integrity of large door opening and closing. But they were able to reduce door opening approximately 60%. Imagine the cold air that's not escaping then.
Yeah, that's huge.
That doesn't have to use electric refrigeration motors to re-chill that environment.
Mm-hmm.
So real positive example of one particular site. I don't unfortunately have the specifics of the payback, but dollar-wise, but the ROI, the payback period, was 9 months.
Wow.
So the building owner had the total cost of the project would be paid by the utility cost reductions in 9 months. After 9 months, the utility bill is that specific amount lower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do they get, is the project director in constant contact with PG&E? I mean, can they get advice as they're developing a proposal or a prospectus for you to look at?
Yeah. Let me share with you how the MAP, the Market Access Program, is structured. So the state I think it was AB 182, said, we see that the grid has grave concerns. We're going to fund the summer reliability programs. They gave PG&E $60 million over 2 years to create the MAP program. PG&E then went out to two program implementers to do the project coordination with project developers and customers. These program implementers, the one is called Recurve Analytics, the other is called AESC, for Automated Energy Services Corporation. They coordinate all of the activity of the Market Access Program, from the engineering to the customer eligibility to the site qualifications to the financials, all aspects of the financials involved, to the savings verifications that take a year to verify in what's known as M&V, measurement and valuation, which is an assurance that the savings are taking place based on the incentive that was paid out. So the end customer can have complete handholding with any and all questions from A to Z points of the project from start to finish. Yeah. Boy, I could go on further, but I just want to
that makes
be
sense.
A little more
That's
succinct.
I'm just curious about how many people you have working on these projects.
Well, we have myself and a peer, an engineering peer at PG&E. So there's two of us. And then the implementers each have 4 to 6 people in their organizations that then work with the hundreds of project developers and customers.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to put that number together, we have about 15 people that run the program for the service territory.
Like Prospect SV, a lot fewer people than I would have thought to manage this kind of project. Nice work.
Nice work, yeah. So we just have a minute or so left. How can people learn more about it? How can they get involved in the information meeting? Where should they go to if they want to know more or participate?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The first site, the general market access program site, is just go to www.pg&e.com/market access.
Okay,
that's... And that gives you all of the aspects of the program. From there, you can click on one of the program implementers, Recurve or AESC, that then goes into great detail as to, okay, what type of technology are you looking to potentially upgrade? What is your current usage? Or would you like us to find out your current usage and share that with you and see what the potential reduction is? So that would be at recurve.com/market access.
Good.
Or okay. AESC.com/market access.
All right. That's very helpful. Thank you.
And we want to thank you, Mark Salovich. Mark works at Pacific Glass and Electric.
Gas and electric. Not
what
glass
did I say? No glass. Sorry, my throat is killing me here. Program manager focusing on energy efficiency in the commercial sector. He manages the market access for general commercial buildings. And they're holding an information meeting about the program February 2nd at 5:30 p.m. Thank you so much for being with us today, Mark.
Absolutely, my pleasure. We're doing great things as far as energy efficiency and sustainability, both at PG&E and across California. And I'm really proud to be part of that solution.
That's great. Yes, thank you so much.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico. Coming up in just a few minutes is Bobby Tryon with North State Give and Take. She'll be talking to Jake Palazzo. He's formerly of Mountain Sports. And at 6:30, it's Ginger Nichols with Radioactive. Thanks so much for listening.
Possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Butte College, where your future starts with 3-week classes beginning January 3rd, are offered online at the Butte College main campus or the Chico Center. If you can't join this winter, spring classes include cosmetology and barbering at the main campus, Chico and Skyway Centers, and their new Glenn County Center in Orland. Promise scholarships are also available for first and full-time students. Details at butte.edu/start. And by the printed image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The printed image, open Monday through Friday.